This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me the playwrights and directors Catherine Capilaro and Andrew Roan. A few years back, they came out with a great musical, Temp Slave, and their new, quite exciting musical, Walmartopia, has opened in Madison, Wisconsin. Maybe it'll be on the road soon. Catherine Capilaro and Andrew Roan, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you, Matt.
Let's start at the beginning and how you got interested in musicals, in political musicals. Were you two people who loved musicals growing up, Guys and Dolls and all that other stuff, or did this come along later?
Well, I remember early on listening to records of musicals. I didn't go to one until I was a grown-up, but listening to Oliver and West Side Story and My Fair Lady and singing along to the musicals in my living room at home and sort of keeping my secret love for them secret until high school when I got to play Hello, Dolly. But I've always loved musicals.
And Andrew, you're a musician, a very talented musician. What got your interest in musicals?
Well, I really grew up wanting to be a rock star more, and, you know, got a lot of politics in that direction too. And it was really as an adult that I saw the viability of the form. Although actually I now realize that a lot of musicians that I love the most, like David Bowie and Pete Townsend, both were constantly tossing around ideas for musicals and wrote many musicals. Well, of course there's Tommy.
David Byrne too.
Oh, David Byrne, really?
Yeah.
And why'd you give up the dream of being a rock star?
Oh, I haven't totally given up. I want to see if I can somehow combine it with the musicals.
A rock musical will be in the works at some point, I think.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that one. Tell me about Temp Slave, how you got interested in doing Temp Slave and what that was about.
Well, we got interested because we were temp slaves in New York City, San Francisco, and Madison. Both of us made our living for quite a few years in doing medical studies and temp jobs and just kind of eking out a living, and became a fan of a zine called Temp Slave that was put out by somebody here in Madison, Jeff Kelly. And it just had wonderful tales of what people were going through at their temp jobs and, you know, as disposable workers, basically. And we had a lot of experiences of our own, and our friends had them, and we also were reading about them. So we ended up putting together a kind of a monumental work of fiction that was all about had five leads. It was all about temp jobs, temp experiences, and Andrew put together a terrific soundtrack using all sorts of styles of music. We didn't know what we were doing. We just kind of went on gut instinct and put together these stories, and it ended up being a real success with audiences.
Yeah, I know. I saw it, and people were just ecstatic in the audience because it had so much energy and was so true to life. At that time, temp workers and the condition of temp workers were beginning to be talked about. Catherine, you mentioned to me right before we started that at that point you were doing Temp Slave, that Manpower, Inc. Was the leading employer of the nation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And who's the leading employer now?
Well, it's Walmart Corporation, which is no accident for us. I mean, we loved bringing the stories of workers to the stage. That's one of our missions artistically. And, you know, since Temp Slave, we've been trying to figure out what's next. And all of a sudden, it was actually reading Barbara Ehrenreich's Nickel and Dimed when the little light bulb went off and said, of course, the next musical has to be about Walmart.
Have you shared this with Barbara Ehrenreich, this script?
I haven't yet. I know she liked Temp Slave. She read Temp Slave. But we'll send her a copy and send her a DVD of the show because I bet she'd like it.
Yeah,
I can act as a go-between there if you need it, too.
Yeah.
Since she writes for The Progressive and I email her once or twice a month. So
right.
I'm sure she'd be pleased to hear about it because she's stuck with Nickel and Dimed as a theme. And I think she has a whole website about Nickel and Dimed.
And there's a musical Nickel and Dimed as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is right in keeping with that. Is there a wave of new political musicals, or are you guys really pushing that wave?
Well, you know, I don't know. We are not as informed about, you know, the state of current musical theater as I think we should be. It is interesting that there was a kind of runaway hit, first off Broadway that moved to Broadway, You're in Town, which had so many aspects in common with both Temp Slave and Walmartopia, in that, you know, funny, kind of campy, and featured sort of the little guy rising up and evil CEOs. Although their approach was very much tongue-in-cheek and making fun of musicals and kind of had a cynical ending, where we, I think we have a real kind of sincere core to what we're doing.
In a way, you go straight at it, and then in a way, you go zany, which is kind of a nice combination. But as part of going straight at it, why don't we give listeners a flavor of the opening song of Walmartopia, which kind of sets up everything that happens later,
yeah.
Or some of the things that happen later.
Right.
Life's getting harder for me. The pay's not enough. I've been here 5 years and I'm barely promoted. Well, the men that I train just keep moving up. I know that they say that we're all one big team, but that's not how it seems. I keep my thoughts to myself. I wear a smile. I do all they ask for above and beyond, but they keep demanding just one extra mile. I wait for the day when they'll give me my due, and I hope it comes soon.
Got me in your grip. Can't afford to slack. It's affecting my mind, making me think that I can't do any better. Walmart, you make me Walmart. Feeding Walmart, you are Walmart. Oh, Walmart.
You always pay less, less.
They pay me less.
More, more.
And I have to work more. I know I can't leave.
No, no.
'Cause they lock the door.
Night, night.
I work through the night.
Light, light.
Under fluorescent light.
Less, less.
Yes, they pay me less, but it's better than picking strawberries, I guess.
I gave up my store, now I sweep the floor. 'Cause my back's against the wall.
We're coming to your town.
Walmart.
We'll let your competition down.
Walmart.
We hope you welcome us, but we're gonna come in anyway. Walmart, light up the
part of the idea, it seems to me, of Walmartopia is straight up educational. I mean, even in the program, you have a funny little quiz and you have actors of the show handing out the program with pencils. And to tell me about the program again. It's a quiz, right?
It's a quiz. We didn't bring it in. We should. But there's so much, especially in the first act of Walmartopia, is set in the present. It follows the story of Vicky, a worker who... Now, this was also another inspiration for this is a book by Liza Featherstone called Selling Women Short that that talks about the sex discrimination lawsuit and what the challenges that women are facing at the corporation. So we looked at a character, Vicky, who actually believes in the company, thinks she's someplace where she can get ahead, and she's facing doors being shut one after the other. She's got some colleagues who are more interested in a different approach of starting a union. She's not so into that idea. But Vicky represents we tried to have somebody to represent your average Walmart worker. So not everybody is, you know, not everybody is raising a stink there. There are people, there's a corporate culture that has succeeded in a way. There's a cheer. There's this whole.
How does the cheer go?
Oh, you know, Andrew. Just give me a W, give me an A, give me an L, and then give me a squiggly for the hyphen. And what's that spell? Who's number one? The customer. Whose Walmart is it? My Walmart.
And they have thousands of people doing this at the shareholders meeting. I mean, it's.
And
it's
they a, do. Do they really shake their bottoms when they're doing the squiggly, or is that
yes,
your invention?
That no. That,
yeah.
That, I don't know exactly how they do it. We didn't infiltrate an actual Walmart cheer, but we've seen
it on.
Yeah, we've seen a video.
But getting back to the quiz.
Yes.
The quiz was an effort. When we were doing a reading of the show, there were a few things that we put into the show that people said, this is a very early workshop stage. You know, Capilaro and Roni, you've just gone too far. No one's going to believe that. And you know what? Those were facts from Liza Featherstone's book. I mean, having business meetings at Hooters where women managers felt totally marginalized and, you know, and horrible. There's all sorts of facts that we worked into the first act, and we wanted people to know when they were facts. So the quiz kind of goes through a few bizarre things that sound too bizarre to be true that are actually true that are in the show. So it was just kind of a fun way for people to get an idea of what's our imagination and what isn't. And of course, we do take much artistic license. That's part of our job. But it was also really, really amazing to research Walmart and their business practices, because a lot of the material came straight from media accounts of what the company's doing. We didn't need to embellish some of these things. And Sam Walton himself was quite a unique character.
There's a big campaign right now against Walmart from the labor movement, also from some feminist organizations, because of the sex discrimination lawsuit. And there's a movie out, a documentary by Robert Greenwald, High Cost of Low Price. Have you hooked up with this, or is this just kind of an independent kind of separate thing that just you happily have tripped upon?
Well, we've hooked up in a limited way. Our music is... on the High Cost of Low Price website, we've talked with the producer, and I even said, hey, are you interested in filming our play? So, you know, I would love to get together with them.
Did they respond to that yet? It seems unnatural.
They haven't to that request, but they did say, great music, love it. We'll put it up.
And the unions locally have been very supportive. We offered discount tickets to Walmart workers because we would love Walmart workers. And we have had some come, and we'd like more to come and experience the show. So the unions have helped us out with that. And also great publicity from the AFL-CIO and from locals all over the place. And I think that there's definitely a possibility of more collaboration in the future, especially if we can bring a national tour together. There's been this remarkable response from people from the region who would love the show to come to their town because they're fighting Walmart.
I know, and those fights are happening all over the
country. All
over
the place, yeah. It's a little tricky to keep track of how many people would like to have the show.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking with the playwrights and directors, Catherine Capilaro and Andrew Roan, of the new musical Walmartopia. And one of the exciting things about Walmartopia, from a audience member's perspective, is the zaniness of it. Because you start off telling the story of conditions at Walmart and illustrating those. And then you have a Walmart executive, the head of Walmart, who has this incredible song, Nibbled to Death by Guppies. So why don't we listen to that and talk about it a little bit?
Sure.
When will they learn that it's futile to resist, but they will learn? When I squeeze them in my fist, but I grow weary. When will they cease and desist? I'm tired of being nibbled to death by guppies. Crushing adversaries is all in a day's work, hearing them squeal. I consider it a perk, but they're going too far. now I'm getting hurt. I'm tired of being nibbled to death by Guppy. That's what they say.
Help us succeed.
All night and all day.
Jesus is not the answer you say, but send to me.
Won't they leave me alone?
You're a
please go away. My only chance is to shut you out of my mind. Lock out your words, no matter how I'm maligned. But it's not getting easier. They're coming from behind. I'm tired of being nibbled to death by Guppy. Swirling around me, lurking in the corners, darting out to take a bite. Watching, waiting for a sign of weakness, they slip away, hiding from my sight. Working on a laws and regulations, ethics and sensitivity, tying me, finding me, pressing down upon me. Get back, I need some room to breathe. Not so brave now, are you? But what was I so afraid of? Why, you're so very small. Why, you're not even human, are you? Whereas I am so much more than human. My arms stretch round the world. My eyes and ears constantly feed me information. I know your shopping habits, your income, everything you desire and how much you pay. I know everything before you do, and I can act on that information instantly around the globe. Why, have you any idea how great my power is? Any idea? I am tired of being nibbled to death by Guppy!
So where'd you get the idea for this one, nibbled to death by guppies?
Well, that is an actual quote from Lee Scott. He discussing...
CEO of Walmart.
Oh, yeah, the CEO, the present CEO. He was discussing all the PR troubles they were having, and he likened it, quote, to being nibbled to death by guppies.
And so in the musical, you have these actors playing, you know, mutant guppies who are taking bites out of the guy.
Exactly.
And how quickly did you realize the potential for that scene?
Oh, that was instant. As soon as we heard that quote, we're like, that's it. That's
I think
song.
We were also, when we were reading a review of Spamalot, that, you know, the Monty Python musical, and just how beautifully silly it was, and we're like, we got to remember to just go for it and just go over the top and do really crazy stuff.
Right. No holds barred was kind of our attitude while we were writing it.
You do that in a couple other ways. One thing that I really enjoyed was the character The Head, which is a person who's on stage and all you see is the person's head. You don't see the body. What's The Head? What's the character The Head?
Well, that's Sam Walton's head. Sam Walton has come back to give some advice to his executive board, feels the company is steered off course. And so the director of research, Dr. Normal, decides to go back in time, bring back Sam Walton, or at least as much as he can get through his portal.
There's a little glitch with the time machine. So right. Only the head comes through.
Yeah. But he's fully cognizant. He can speak, and he has advice to give to the board. And of course, it just so happens that Vicky is visiting the Walmart headquarters at the time when the head is revealed. So then she's seen a little too much for the executives to be able to let her out the door.
The implication is that, you know, if Sam Walton were alive today, he wouldn't like the practices of the current Walmart. Is that really true, do you think, or would he have just evolved as this capitalist as he started?
Well, that's an interesting question. I talked to a former Walmart, or actually, I guess a Sam's Club manager who had moved on to a job she liked a lot better, but she voiced that opinion that, yeah, that it wouldn't be like that if Sam Walton was still in charge. But we read Sam Walton's autobiography, and he did have this sort of folksy, friendly thing. But from the beginning, his driving principle was cut costs wherever possible. And he paid people way below, you know, what other people around him were paying. And he was just ruthlessly competitive. And he justified it to himself and to everyone around him really well. I mean, he can put a great folksy spin on his ambition.
But, and then they, you know, the book would bring up criticisms about their business practices, and he didn't deal with them head on. I mean, it was headed in that direction before he died, certainly.
And how do you respond to the criticism or the argument, the apology, the justification for people to say, yeah, I know Walmart's bad, but it's cheaper, and I don't have a lot of money, and a lot of people in this country are struggling to get by, and they can get their cheaper produce there, and why not?
Right. Well, you know, first of all, I do believe there are places where people, especially poor people, have no choice but to shop at Walmart. But this is a company that survives and thrives on the most vicious form of capitalism. They are subsidized heavily through government subsidies and having their workers on food stamps and on state health insurance plans all over the place. So it's not that those costs; those are hidden costs. Those are externalities that people aren't always aware of. Something that we hope our show and the documentary and other ways of people understanding that there is a cost, societal cost, a very large societal cost to having a company this large do business in this manner. I mean, just their trade practices alone are among the most ruthless that I've ever seen. An amazing frontline documentary about their connection to China and forcing their suppliers to move to China. So it's not just cheap stuff.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. That's Catherine Capilaro, who is one of the directors of Walmartopia. And also with me is Andrew Rohn, another of the directors and playwright. Now, you take Walmartopia down this portal to the future that Dr. Normal is inventing. So you go to 2034, and then you have a real dystopia, where you are showing what Walmart is like and what America is like under the reign of Walmart. So why don't we listen to just a snippet of that song?
We are one under Walmart.
That was the title song, Walmartopia, to the musical by Catherine Capilaro and Andrew Roan. What is your solution to Walmart and the dystopia that you portray? I mean, in the musical itself, you talk about creativity as an answer. There's also, obviously, the union drive, too, which is there. But I was surprised and actually happy that you didn't just end with union, kind of the Norma Rae, you know, we're unionized and that's it. And you took it in a different direction toward creativity and art and individuality. Tell me a little more about that choice.
Well, our focus, we actually wrote the second act that takes place in the future first as its own thing, which was partly in reference to, you know, the huge art center that went up in Madison here, the Overture Center, just as kind of not quite a protest, but a just bringing up the idea that we shouldn't just have these giant arts palaces and just sit there and receive art from a small expert class of artists, but that art should be integrated into our lives, that there should be a lot of art done by non-experts. So the whole second act kind of has that bent. It focuses in on what would theater be like if Walmart continues to expand into every area. You know, they've now got the grocery stores, the pharmacies. You know, what if they just kept expanding?
So in 2034, they own the media, all of the national security apparatus, and all of the arts is controlled by Walmart. But we try to focus in on the arts. That's where we are, and we go into a Walmart-sponsored musical, which our heroine Vicky ends up subverting and hijacking to turn it into something new. And then the song that they actually end up creating was based on the real dreams and concerns of cast members when we did we had everybody do a free write about what creativity meant to them. And it was just wonderful to see people from all walks of life, because these are all volunteer actors, talking about, you know, one guy saying he would like to see aerial photos from the last 100 years and have everybody see them so that we could see what we're doing to the landscape, and someone else wanting to give free food to everybody. And so we really wanted to take a look at how self-expression and creativity is hampered by consumer culture and presenting an alternative to that. So that's that's sort of our Capra-esque spin on we wanted to present more than just Walmart is bad, but what's better? Well, what's better is a place where people get to create, perhaps where people are compensated for their creations.
Catherine Kepler, what is the website where people can go find out more about Walmartopia?
www.walmartopia.com.
That's all one word, Walmartopia.
All one word. And there's song clips up there and photos and reviews. We got a lot of great great reviews and publicity this time.
Well, thanks so much for being my guest, Catherine Capilaro and Andrew Roan, the musical again, Walmartopia.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.